Yes, and we're recording. Exciting. Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of the Quiz Front Booking Podcast. This is Maya speaking. I'm one of the many team members of Quiz Front located in Austria in Europe. And today, our very first guest is a very good friend and also a Quiz Front team member. Her name's Iris, but I'll give it over to Iris. Please introduce yourself.
Hello. I'm Iris. I am one of the booking agents at Quiz to the Front Booking. Been working with Maya for the past year or so, which has been really great. I also work in music festivals and just, that's a little bit about me.
Hell yes. I'm so happy to have you on. This is exciting. This is quite literally the first podcast episode. I have no idea whether people will actually listen to it and or like it. I've also never done a podcast before. I don't think you've either.
Yeah, have not, but I'm excited for it. We'll
Yes.
see
All
how it
right.
goes.
Let's get into it. So, Quiz Front Booking Podcast, we're aiming for this to be a podcast showcasing marginalized artists. But also, we want to showcase the folks behind the scenes in DIY and the music industry, with the overall idea of this podcast being about the empowerment of marginalized people taking up space in the music industry and in DIY music. Yeah, so today we want to go a little bit into how each of us got into music and later. Self-employment, what issues we face throughout that as marginalized people, and then kind of go into how, from our perspective and experience, venues and promoters, but also audience members and artists and everybody involved in a show can do better to keep everybody safe and make sure that everybody has a comfortable experience. Yeah, so, I guess shall we go into how each of us kind of got into music and maybe give a little bit more detail what exactly we kind of do? Yeah, do you want to start?
Yeah, let's do it. So, getting into music, I started really early on just playing in a band. And that's really how to do it. Like, how to get started is just getting into your local music community and finding opportunities from there. That's how I went about it was I was in a band and I was playing shows and meeting other bands, other promoters and venues, and just it's basically a really heavy word of mouth type of industry.
Yeah.
And you really have to, just talking to people, that's how you go further and learn more. So that's how I got into it.
What was your age at that time? I really want to go into that one.
I would say like my first band, I started like 12 or 13, and then
That's wild.
but it was a few years of like really messing things up a
Oh,
lot. Like
yeah.
there's a lot of things I look back on now and I'm like, ooh, like I shouldn't have done that. That's embarrassing.
But I mean, like
But
13 years old, fair enough. And by the way, I mean, I knew this before that you started at that age, but I'm just kind of going into it because I personally think it's quite remarkable to get into music or like any organization type of thing at all, kind of at that age.
And then I wouldn't say I actually started like working in the industry until I was probably like 16,
Right.
17 is when I like took it from just like, messing around in bands on the local level, which is great on its own, but like working with more like professional level productions and companies and stuff. I started that around when I was like 16, 17. Yeah, it's been a few years now and it's been really fun, a lot of growing, and the last year has been really great. Like Maya knows, I work a lot in like music festival in that realm, especially in merch and box office, a lot of those like customer guest services facing type roles. And the last year was just really incredibly busy. I was working full, well, so I was a full-time student while also working basically full-time hours in the music industry.
Wow.
Yeah, and also another thing that a lot of people don't think about is I might be working like 40 hours or more in just one weekend alone, and that doesn't even account to all of the travel time as well.
Yeah.
So some weeks I would be doing like 15 hours of traveling on top of that, and just balancing all of that with being a full-time college student was a lot, but it was very fun. And yeah, that's basically how I got into it, though. It's just keep going after opportunities and meeting people and just keep learning about new things that way. It's definitely very word of mouth.
That sounds pretty, again, remarkable. I'd be interested to kind of dive a little bit deeper into the age 16 kind of period, where you said there was a bit of a change into more professional kind of work that you did. I think we both kind of know how things kind of work within more like the DIY sphere, and where it's more word of mouth, kind of that thing. And in a way, rather easy to break into music and into DIY, because it's designed to be so accessible to new people, which is why I love mm-hmm. about it so much. Like, I think I personally still haven't managed to make any actual steps towards more like the music industry, aka large venues, bigger shows, more kind of professional things. I love being in DIY, but I'm fairly interested into people that manage to get more into larger festivals, larger rooms. I always wonder how people make that step beyond that, especially people that kind of come from DIY. Again, I don't think I've accomplished that at all so far. So I'm wondering how did you get into that?
Honestly, I don't really know. Like, it just happened very gradually. It was something that I had very, like, it was a very solid goal that I had in my mind. Like, this is where I want to go. This is how I want to get there. And I think that's one of the things that's kind of important about music, is like, there's so many different pathways you can choose.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, so I think it's really important to just like have a very solid idea of where you want to go. I mean, you can, yes. I mean, obviously you can explore different areas and stuff, but always keep like that final goal in mind, just because it's very easy to get sidetracked and end up in something completely different than what yes. your goal is, which is something that I did struggle with at first too, was I was just kind of taking every single opportunity possible and ended up doing stuff that I didn't want to do at all. But yeah, I guess like how I first got started was definitely through the help of like forums, like music industry groups online. One of yeah. the ones that really helped me like when I was really young was the Girls Behind the Rock Scene group.
I was gonna say we should do a big shout out to them, because because in fact we met through GBTS, didn't we?
We did, and a lot of my right, a lot of my jobs, especially like the very early on ones, were from that group. I definitely yes. would not have been able to get to do all the things I have been able to do without that group.
Yes.
So for anybody in the US who is looking to get more into music, women, non-binary people, etc., that is a really awesome group. And it was just through...
Just to clarify, maybe real quick, it's a Facebook group. It's literally called Girls Behind the Rock Show. And also to add to that, like recently a Europe group was added. So there's now a Facebook group called GBTRS EU as well, which might be very interesting for some of our European followers. Because, for example, I'm based in Europe as well. And that's where Quizfront originally started. But either way, huge shout out to GBTRS. They're doing fantastic work. Yeah, I look at to them a lot for all the work that they're doing.
Yeah, and that's really where I found most of the opportunities when I was super young. It's a group that I feel like has a decent balance of young people looking to learn and also yes. some people who've been in it longer. And it was just like talking to people on the group, and also like people would post job opportunities, both entry level and in the professional level. And so just a lot of reaching out to people that way, that was definitely one of the big things that helped me get started. And I really don't know. It's like the weirdest part is it's because, like, even on the professional level, it is basically all word of mouth and yes. who you know.
Yes.
So I can't really pinpoint like an exact like way that I was able to get these opportunities other than just talking to people. And I know that's like what everyone says. And I know when I was younger too, I was like so frustrated because I was like, what do you mean? Who do I talk to? Like I wanted like these solid directions for how to get there.
I was going to say, let's try maybe for a sec, because I mean, both of us do have some form of experience in music for sure. We've both been doing this for a couple of years now. I mean, let's try to come up with a little bit of like a solid directory. Like, so if, you know, we were to start over again, get into music, like picture a listener that's maybe also this 16-year-old kid that kind of wants to get into this. Absolutely join the Facebook group GBTRS at this point, and I've like given this advice to a bunch of people, but there's also this Facebook group called Shadow Me Women. I don't know how inclusive they are of trans people. All I'm saying is I haven't asked because sometimes I just don't want to bother risking to get a bunch of transphobia in like cis women's faces, you know?
Right.
For the listener that doesn't know me, I'm a trans woman and my pronouns are she and her. Yay. But either way, so there's this Facebook group called Shadow Me Women. And the whole concept is essentially that women support other women, as in if there's a woman who has some form of a job on a tour that could be anywhere from like a sound tech to light tech to tour manager, driver, whatever it is, they use that opportunity to get other people into it for an experience. So essentially they will post tour schedule and be like, all right, I will take one quote-unquote intern for the night. And the basic rule is that no money ever goes from one head to the other. So essentially you can just text them on Facebook and be like, hey, I would like to be your intern for the night. And then you can do that. And yeah, like do that whenever the tour is near you. I actually saw this like sound tech for Kate Bush or something invite women to shadow her for a night, which I thought was a fantastic opportunity. But either way, so that could be a very, very cool way both to see the work of a professional behind the scenes on a tour, but also, you know, to get some context, talk to some people. It's a pretty good idea, pretty solid one. Then obviously join the GBTRS group 100%. Just post in there, be like, hey, I'm XYZ, this is where I'm based, this is the direction in music I want to go into, and I'm sure a bunch of people will absolutely reach out to you. Plus, I think there's like job advertising and stuff on GBTRS as well.
There is. And I do want to like add to that point about like shadowing people. It does seem really scary to just like cold email people or cold message people. But I found like a lot of times, especially with other women in the industry, like that is also one of the things that really helped me in the beginning was getting those mentorships. I had a mentorship with one of the national directors at a House of Blues venue. That was one thing that really helped me and also helped me discover where I wanted to go in the industry. And it's just really about like creating those long lasting relationships. So that's the thing with shadowing is not only do you want to reach out and do the work, like make sure you keep up with those relationships and keep asking questions and keep asking like direct questions. Like if there's something that you know they have experience in, or if there's something you know that they do that you want to get more involved in. Like, for example, if I knew somebody that I work with has worked at this other festival that I would also like to eventually work, like asking like, hey, like, how did you get that opportunity? Like, what steps can I take to get there? I think really it's all about the questions that you ask, like really asking very specific direct questions rather than like general, how do you get into music questions, which even though they're great, it's not easy to find a specific pathway with those types of questions.
Focus in. I was going to say like find a tour manager, find a sound tech. I think a very kind of easy example for that would be if you want to be a music photographer, for example, very, very good career path. a lot of bands have photographers with them on the road, and obviously they will credit all of the shots from each night. And if you like a band and you see the credits for the photographer and you want to be a music photographer, the way to go could absolutely be just follow them on Facebook, follow them on Twitter, see what they're up to. And I think as you said, Iris, even though it seems scary to cold email them, just text them and be like, hey, could I maybe shadow you that one night? Or just send them an email and be like, hey, I want to break into this. How did you first get into this? Do you have some form of advice for me? And I'm sure that most people would absolutely love to give good advice to a young person wanting to start out. Yeah, like most people will probably, yeah, just be happy to help and be friendly. Don't be scared. It seems very scary, but like do the thing. And like my whole music industry / kind of DIY music experience has been that making connections with people, long-lasting connections, is always kind of a snowball principle, because this person knows five other people and then these five other people know five other people each. And I can totally pinpoint where so many of the opportunities I've been given come from to like this specific contact I've made. And it's really all about, yeah, the friends that you make, the connections that you make, and about the word of mouth in the end. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I don't want to make it more scary again by saying, oh, well, you got to have the right connections. But I think, yeah, going back to like the advice we want to give on like how to specifically get started, do the thing online, join the Facebook groups we spoke about. And then I think you also said this, start out on a local level. This is where everybody in the end started out. Like, ask your friends in this local band if you could do merch for them for like their little weekend or tour or whatever. Go to your local favorite venue, speak to them and ask if you can maybe help with, I don't know, box office or ticketing, or if it's more of a DIY venue, then you could just ask when the next house meeting is, and then you just go there and then you're in.
That entire philosophy even applies on like the national, more professional level as well. Yeah. Like once you know you have the credentials, you've been doing local work, and you also have some experience working at these venues on the local level, there's been festivals where I've gotten a job simply from emailing them, say, hey, like I saw that like you have this festival going on, and I curious to know like if you're hiring anybody for so-and-so staff, whether it be box yes. office, merch, production, whatever you feel like your specialty and where your experiences are. I'm interested in working this festival. Are you currently hiring? Here's my resume. Here's the experience that I have in these areas. Even just cold emailing that way has gotten me so many gigs at different festivals. So yeah, it really is just about contacting people. It's scary, and like along the way, you may run into people who aren't willing to help. And I know, like, especially for women and people of color, queer people, like that tends to be a bigger issue as well. But just don't let that discourage you, because like for the people who aren't willing to help, there's going to be 10 other people who are willing to back you up and help yes. you along the way. So yeah, it really just is about contacting people, reaching out and maintaining those relationships, and really asking the right questions, asking for specific directions, or at least things that can give you and your mind a specific pathway.
Yes, 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 for sure. I would specifically like to ask, Iris, for you as a person of color, have you had any kind of moments where people didn't kind of want to let you in through the door as soon as they found out you're a person of color?
Oh, of course. And I don't think it's just because I'm a person of color, but also like with being a woman and also being relatively young, and I am like a pretty tiny person. So I do run into a lot of people actually who, I don't know how to word it, they're just very like gatekeepers of the music yes. industry.
Yes.
It happens like all the time. And I think it's just because like, working in the music industry is very competitive, and we're in this environment where some people take that and make it every person for themselves. But that's just like not the way it should be. And I can say pretty confidently that the people who do that, most people don't like them because they overall just don't treat other people as well because they're always looking out for themselves. So it does happen a lot. There's even been instances where people have deliberately lied and done things to prevent me from getting opportunities, like lying to employers. But the reality is every single time that something like that has happened, that person has had a reputation of just being an overall not great person. So, and other people in the industry know that.
Yes.
In reality, when those people are acting like that, they're not just acting like that to you. They're acting like that to a bunch of other people as well. So they're full of crap, honestly. just those people suck. Like, there's really no other way to think about it.
It hasn't happened to me so much. I think that's mainly due to the fact that I never really ventured out of like the DIY music, more like underground kind of sphere too much. I mean, I'm not saying that gatekeeping doesn't happen there, but I think it's a different story in like more professional music industry kind of circles. But either way, what I want to get at is what helped for me whenever I'd be kind of put off by other people's actions or gatekeeping or whatever. I think it's important to have a very good support network of other, in our cases, especially marginalized people around you. Another quite interesting thing I've participated in a couple times in the last weeks is there's currently a weekly Zoom meeting going on for music industry people of all kinds around the world. I mean, in this case, it is sort of focused around the idea of how to get through the corona pandemic and like how to deal with the whole issue. But my point is try to find good social networks, support networks that can be Zoom meetings with other music people. And these happen. Another thing that comes to my mind, if, for example, you want to go down the tour manager road, there's this series called Tour Management 101. Where there's a bunch of webinars and sessions and stuff. But either way, find people to support you, find people that want to go down the same path. And most important, it is all about collaboration, not competition.
Yeah, definitely. And I do want to add to your point about like finding your support system. The communities and the networks that I've built while working, people who have worked with me personally and also are marginalized people themselves and know what I was going through, those people were the ones who were able to back me up when I was going through discrimination and gatekeeping. Those are the people who have your backs. So it's definitely important to make those friendships and just really rely on each other. That's really the whole point, is that even though it is a competitive industry, you can't get anywhere by pushing down other people, because every day that you're working with other people. The music industry is a very collaborative environment. You can't put on a show or a festival or a tour without working with hundreds of other people. And so it really is so important to have those relationships, because the people who are gatekeeping, they aren't able to maintain those relationships because they don't work well with others, and people are able to see through that, and those people will back you up. It's all about community.
It is. So we've kind of been talking about like the work a little bit, and you just mentioned how it takes so many people to properly work together to set up a show. Now I would be interested, how would a typical day look like in your kind of job? I mean, I know that you work different jobs, but you know, maybe you can give us one or two different schedules, say, as a booking agent, slash tour manager, slash merch person.
Yeah, so I guess I'll start with the booking and touring side. Well, I guess I'll start from the beginning. When you're booking a tour, it really is, again, all about cold emails, like writing up a pitch for your artist. Here is my artist. Here's a bio. Here are their links. And just emailing that to venues that you think would be a good fit. It also takes a lot of research, which I know Maya knows.
Shout out to your database.
Yeah. But yeah, just making sure, like, for each city you want to play or you want your artist to play, like, you have a list of venues. Go do the research to find the list of venues if you don't already have that. And then it's really from there, it is just sending out a bunch of emails and working out deals with the venues. And then that's pretty much the booking side of it. Every single show kind of takes a different pathway. So it's kind of hard to say what the process is, because it is very much like, at least for me, I'm a very take it as it comes kind of person. So I just kind of see where the conversation is going with the venue and go from there. So every single show is different in terms of how it's set up, but usually, like, you talk about what's the deal as far as financially, how are tickets going to be handled, what about booking other artists, what about local promotion, that kind of stuff. That's pretty much the booking side of it. And the day sheets where you figure out all the specific details as far as, like, where's the band going to park, what time is everyone playing, where is merch going to be set up? What's the Wi-Fi password, down to literally every single detail? Are there going to be snacks and drinks? That's the most important one.
Yeah,
so that's kind of on the booking side of it. I wish I had gotten to do more of the touring side of it with Queers to the Front.
Do you want to briefly speak about what kind of things you were getting into, or like at least the ones that were actually announced?
Yeah, so there were so many projects, and when the pandemic hit and just the entire music industry went down, that was probably the like biggest thing that I was upset about, was that we had spent so much time working on these projects for marginalized artists, and like we never really got to see them through. It will happen, because I didn't put all that work in just for it to not happen. But yeah, the one that I was most excited about was our tour with Tori Mercer. That's one of the ones that I had booked, and I was going to tour manage for that one. And that one, if anybody who doesn't know who Tori Mercer is, I definitely recommend you check her out. She is a queer woman, and her work is really focused on her experiences as someone in the LGBTQ community. And we had set up this tour. It was very focused on making sure we had a safe space for LGBTQ people. And we were working with venues to make sure that we had things like gender neutral restrooms, and also like safety hotlines and all of that. And all of the artists were other queer people as well. We even had different types of artists as well at some of the shows, like art vendors, drag performers. So
That sounds so cool.
At first it was just like an idea that we were throwing around, like, oh, that might be kind of fun. And then later we were like, yeah, let's do that. Like, we're talking about, you know, queer pride and uplifting queer artists, and queer art isn't just limited to music. There are so many different forms, and it's so important that we highlight all of them. That was one thing that was really important for us, was just highlighting all kinds of queer art.
I was very excited for you and for that tour to happen. It's also not the only tour that Iris was working on, obviously. There's a bunch of others that kind of fell down as well as the pandemic hit. Kind of like, not many things worse than cancelling a tour you've worked on without ever having announced it. You know, it makes you feel like it never happened, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, people don't realize how much work goes into putting all these, but a lot of these things are sometimes planned anywhere up to like a year in advance. So like, when we're canceling these tours, even though they hadn't been announced, they had already been in the works for like 7-8 months or so, and we had already had all the details finalized. So it is very crushing when it's like you put half a year of work into these things just for it to like not even have been announced and it's already canceled.
So you've briefly been saying it, describing the Tori Mercer tour and the kind of specifics for each show. I would be interested to go a little further into the specific conditions QuizFront booking, maybe not just to make it about QuizFront booking and like run a giant ad for us as a podcast, but more like, what are your ideas, Iris? How can a promoter make a show safer? How can a promoter create a safe space? But also afterwards, I'd like to go a little bit more into what not only a promoter, but also the artist that's playing and the audience that is there just as well. What can everybody do to make the show as safe as possible?
Yeah. Well, I guess the thing that we really need to recognize is that safety, it falls back on the entire systems of how these shows are created and how they're run that creates conditions that might make people feel unsafe and unwelcome. So I think that's one of the things that really needs to be addressed when we're talking about safety is it's not just on an individual level. It really goes down to the question of how is this show run? Like what I mean is like, it's not just enough to remove bad individuals, but we also need to address the conditions that allow them to have a platform in the space as a whole. Yes. So some of the ideas that we use for both Queers to the Front, also I try to use for basically every other part of my work and my life in general. One of the things, just really basic things, is gender neutral restrooms or wheelchair accessibility. I know for me, one of my big ones is making sure there are ways to report anything that, you know, anybody feels is unsafe, and also having emergency safety hotlines. There's one idea that I've been seeing get thrown around every now and then that I really love is it's kind of like a secret code system. And like, I know some bars do it where, like, I think it's called like a angel shot or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right. And I think that's something, and I'll elaborate. They have signs in specifically women's restrooms that say if you're in a situation where a man you feel might assault you, or if anything that is making you uncomfortable and feel threatened for your safety, to go to the bar and order an angel shot, which will give the employees like the signal, like this person is in a dangerous situation and needs to be removed immediately. And I think there's a lot of ways that we could also incorporate that for touring specifically. Like I have been playing around with ideas of like the same thing with merch, like having some code signals that you can tell to the merch person or the artist or the tour manager. Also, just having those avenues for people to get out of situations or to report situations after that are anonymous, and making sure you're actually following through with those promises. It's really easy for us to say, oh, here's a form you can fill out, or here's a phone number you can call. But if, you know, if venues or tour personnel aren't showing that they're actually taking these things seriously and following through and making their spaces safer, it doesn't do anything to just put a phone number up if you're not actually doing anything to help. So I think it really goes down to accountability and making sure you're actually responding to these situations and making sure things are changing. I mean, it's very hard to say because I think a lot of it is specific to like the venue or the artist. There are always going to be certain limitations on what we can do as booking agents.
Yeah.
So it's very much like having these general guidelines of safety and accountability, and then adjusting them, or I guess applying them to all these different venues and all these different situations. But yeah, so those are just some ideas that we've been using and thinking about that I think are really great and really open up a discussion on how to make shows safer.
Yeah, I would really like to go a little deeper, like just quickly a little bit back into the reporting kind of idea. So like phone numbers, code signals, stuff like that. But just the point I wanted to make on that, those are great ideas, but they involve the person getting to the bar and like speaking to somebody at the bar or something. So in Europe, for example, promoters will quite often bring up the Angela project and like the similar ones to that. But my point often is you're at a show, say like a punk show, people will drink a lot of alcohol, and usually the bar will be quite crowded by people who want to get a drink. And also it's probably got to be quite loud because like a band is playing in the background, because the bar will quite often be in the same room. And that's why I personally am such a big fan of the phone number system.
Which is why I say, like, obviously every system will have its limitations as well. So it's very much about observing it in real life, like in application, and adjusting it based on what the situation is. Because obviously if the bar or the merch table is super crowded, you don't want these people going there. So maybe you could think about the person at the sound booth or box office, which is usually not as busy during the shows. So it's definitely about like not just implementing it and that's it, but also constantly thinking about how do we make it better or what other ideas are better. Like, that's why I say like a lot of these, they're general guidelines, but you really have to figure out in practice how to implement them so that they are practical. Every venue, every artist, it might be different. So it's really, I mean, it does take some experience and a lot of trial and error, but it definitely don't take these guidelines as like an end all be all, because you really need to apply it to the specific situation.
Yeah. And like, this may sound a little bit overwhelming to a listener that, you know, might just be starting out with this, but honestly, when it comes to safer space policies and just getting started out, every single thing is worth it, because every single thing makes a room of people just a little bit safer already. Like, there's no excuse not to do it. That is what a safer space policy and the idea of like an awareness is all about. You're reducing the risk of any safety concerns happening, and you're actively working, making up your mind on how to create a more inclusive and a safer environment for everybody. And chances are it's going to be way more enjoyable.
Yeah, I really like how you bring that up, because I feel like one big mental barrier, I guess, that gets in the way of people trying to implement safer spaces is they're scared that they're going to be doing it wrong or not doing it enough. And I think the point is that we shouldn't ever think of it as an end all be all, you know, like every single step is a process. It is very much like a learning process. And even just doing one thing changes so much. And we should never think of where we are as like a final destination point, because there's always things we can be doing to keep improving. So the goal shouldn't be to implement everything at once, but think of it as like a learning process and taking it a step at a time. Even these groups that, you know, look like they have all of these different policies and ideas already in place, they're also in the learning process. They're still constantly learning and changing. So we really shouldn't look at safer spaces as like a final, that's it, we did it and it's done, because things are always moving and changing.
Exactly. And yeah, I love flexibility. That is very important. I freely admit, when I got started out with QuizFront, back when I was just the only person doing this before the whole team of people joined me, luckily, I'll admit that I was kind of way too focused on having my concept of safety. I think in the beginning, I sort of expected a little bit too much of promoters, but also artists I was working with. Like, basically, I realized pretty quickly, is what I'm saying, that your standard doesn't always work, especially if you work internationally, as we do with QuizFront. QuizFront kind of rapidly exploded. It was just a thing where I was in Germany at the time, and all of a sudden, there was a team of like 10 people around me, and now we're doing all of this across North America and the UK and the Europe mainland. But either way, like, that's two continents already with like very, very different cultural backgrounds, very different ways how shows are being set up. You need to have a certain flexibility around your concepts of safety, around your personal standards. And by no means am I saying that now I'm there. It's, as you're saying, Iris, very much a lifelong process. And now maybe think, like, how do I get this experience? Say you're like a local promoter, you set up shows at this DIY venue, you're listening to this podcast, and you go like, well, I want to start out, but like, how can I be like flexible with my ideas? How do I do all of this? Well, I would say start out with very small things. Like, it's really not a big deal to set up a gender neutral toilet. Quite often I'll have people look at me literally go like, but like, do we have to build a new bathroom now? I'm like, no, you just, you literally write it on a piece of paper, put it on. Funny anecdote, I remember this promoter in, yeah, it was in Riga, Latvia. I was on tour, and this promoter pretty much straight up refused to make the toilets gender neutral because he hadn't ever done this before. But at the same time, I think he just didn't know how to do it. Like, I had communicated it with him beforehand in a day sheet and stuff like that via email, but I think there was genuinely a bit of a language barrier happening. So it didn't quite come across as I had hoped. Either way, so I was there, and yeah, I literally just explained to the promoter, like, hey, you can quite literally just write gender neutral toilet on a piece of paper, stick it over the binary toilet sign, and you have a gender neutral bathroom. That's literally all you need. It's that easy, and you know, you'll make experience with that. You can totally just talk to other promoters as well. And if, you know, you're quite probably not the only promoter in your city or in your region, go to other shows as well, talk to other people, network and connect. And yeah, just in summary, be flexible, be ready to constantly evolve your ideas, and it can only get better because, again, even the smallest bit of safety is more safety than before.
Yeah, definitely. And also another big one is just making sure that your lineups have women and non-binary people, queer people, people of color. I have had promoters like straight up tell me, I don't know any women in bands. And I'm like, well, you're in a major city and I don't even live there. And I can already name like 100 of them. So clearly you're not looking in the right places and you're just refusing to put any of that effort in. And it's like, we can do all these safety things and say like, oh, we want people to feel safe. But even just having people who look like you in your spaces already makes such a big difference. And like for me as like a woman, if I'm going into a space and they're saying like, oh, we want this to be a safe space, but everybody else in the venue is a white male, like that's obviously not going to show me that they're actually doing the concrete steps to make it a safer, more inclusive space, because you need to actually show it with your actions. And even just having people who are from marginalized communities in that space as leaders of the space, like making sure you're not just the artists, but venue staff, managers and owners as well, that really goes a long way to showing people like, hey, you're welcomed here.
Yeah, like so often I'll have this big topic like diversity and inclusivity at shows. So often I'll have promoters come up to me and be like, how do I even start? Like usually that'll be your typical white cis man, cis male promoter that's, you know, been putting on four all male band shows every week and like never has really done something different. All right, I'm taking a bit of a piss right now, but essentially how can you get started to diversify? Well, as Iris was saying, quite obviously just start looking, start doing research. There's always an artist or band with marginalized people in it. You just need to find it. These people are there, they're just not given the proper platform. But also, it's so important to start with yourself. Start reflecting on how you've done shows in the past and like think about how you failed at the shows, how audience members failed at the shows. Think about the feedback that you've been given from audience members. And quite often promoters will not work on their own, but more like work in a team, and like often, especially in DIY kind of scenes, it'll be a collective of people that set up shows together, like 5, 6, 7, 10 people, something like that. Talk to your team and then also look at which people are in my team. Why are these people in my team? Quite often you'll find out that your team is 9 out of 10 people or white, and like start reflecting, why is that? How did this happen? What kind of space are we creating for an artist, for an audience? Like, what is this showing to the outside world? What is the message that we're sending? And reflect on these things. Start with yourself. and I think Iris, you've been saying this already, but it's not necessarily about the perfect end result. It's really about the journey there. They came out a little more cliche than I thought, but
And I also want to add that, like, one of the best things that you can do is go find communities that are already having those safer spaces in place, because I can assure you, in every city, there is at least one organization that has been doing safer space shows and has been doing that for years. And I think that's one of the important points about allyship, is that we need to be listening to the people who have experience in it and have been doing it forever. Because promoters that, you know, promoters who are just now finding like, oh, I want my space to be more inclusive, and not talking to people who have been doing it before, their ideas aren't always necessarily going to be reflected in the reality of the situation that a lot of marginalized people go through, because they simply don't have the experience and haven't been putting the year's worth of work into it. So I think it's really important to not just be sitting there and trying to think of solutions on your own, but talking to people who have been doing it for years and getting their expertise on it as well.
Yeah, and also, honestly, we've been saying this, but use the internet is such a big resource. So, for example, I, as a white person, I've definitely had a lot of conversations that I have myself, but also kind of in a lot of my friend groups are very white as well. And there's been a lot of conversation on how can we change this? How can we make this better? And a brilliant resource that's been coming up is shared Excel sheet. I don't actually know who started it, but it's called Booking Punks of Color. And there's literally like hundreds of artists in there. And it's been going around kind of music Facebook groups and stuff like that. I think even if you would Google it, you'd probably find it. Or shoot us an email at QuizFron, and I'm happy to send it to you. But yeah, use the resources that are online already. Like, quite literally just give it a Google. And yeah, don't be shy to just do the research.
Yeah, definitely. And I really love, like, talking about this and like making shows safer, and just overall how to be a good ally and how to make spaces more inclusive for everyone. So I think that's like a really great conversation to have.
This seems like a very nice, solid kind of conversation, and this seems to be a pretty good point to kind of round it up. So yeah, I was just kind of gonna say, like, this was really cool, very productive conversation on safer space. But also, I think this pilot episode might have given some really good insight into how to get into music, both on more like a DIY level, but also more like an industry level, wherever you are, wherever you find yourself at. Yeah, I would kind of like to close it down a little bit by kind of asking you, Iris, are there any marginalized artists that you've enjoyed recently? Have there been any record releases that you've been really excited about? Or maybe TV shows or something like that?
Yeah, this isn't like an underground artist or anything, but Janelle Monáe is always like my go-to on my playlist. As far as TV shows, I know we were talking about Sense8, which I went back to watch
it. Yes.
Yeah, I've just been going back and revisiting old TV shows that I love.
I've rewatched Sense8 like 3 times in the last couple of weeks. It's been so good. It's so much fun. So, like, as for music that I've recently gotten into, that also has kind of recently been released. So, for sure, favorite ones would probably be Pity Party's new record called Concrete. So Pity Party is a band that QuizFron has worked with once for European tour last year. And I think it's kind of an open secret that there was another European tour happening this year, which for obvious reasons got cancelled, unfortunately, before it ever properly got announced. But either way, so Pity Party, back in like June, May, released this new record called Concrete. It's a quite beautiful testimony to coping with and healing from sexual assault. It's a very powerful record. When I heard the masters for the first time when we were staying with Sarah, the lead singer from Pity Party in the US, I couldn't quite find myself so much into it yet. But now that the record is out and I've had different chances to give it more of a proper listen in different environments, and listen to it whilst driving, and I listen to it on my headphones, and just different situations. I've really managed to get into it a lot, and it's a very touching record, and I would highly, highly, highly recommend it to everybody and anybody. So yeah, that would be a very hot tip from my side. And other music that I've really been digging, it's nothing that's been recently released, but I've really gotten into Mannequin Pussy, finally. So many friends of mine have constantly talked about them. But either way, yeah, I've non-stop been listening to Mannequin Pussy. Fantastic band. And also I've gotten my third and final one for today's podcast. I've gotten into this Chicago artist called Tasha. It's a solo artist playing with a band, I believe. They're fantastic. Don't know if that's their pronouns, so I'm going to go with they for now. But yeah, they're this person of colour who write deeply insightful songs about their experience being a person of colour and like what that entails. Very, very powerful record that I've been listening to. Yeah, and I mean, TV shows, we've started this, Sense8, nothing but Sense8 for me. That's all I've got my Netflix subscription for. All right, so again, to the listener, this is our first podcast, so obviously we're not great at like super smoothly rounding up the podcast, but I think the usual question that you'd get from a host, Cyrus, being the quote-unquote guest today, would be, so where can people find you if whenever the world has gone back to a place where touring is a possibility again, especially in the US where you're based? Oh, I don't think you've said it, but so Iris is based in Austin, Texas, just so you know where she is and like where she works. I'm based in Graz, Austria. But yeah, either way, so where can people find you if ever they might find themselves in a place to, you know, need a merch person or something for the festival?
Yeah, so people can find me on my Instagram, IRISCHXNG. And that's probably the best way to reach out to me if anybody has any questions or if anybody wants to talk about anything at all. So yeah, not really much on the music front, but just a lot of taking time to focus on myself and on the community.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me. So if people need any work done in Europe at any point ever again, I am always happy to drive for artists anywhere across Europe and the UK. Always happy to do tour management. And also, Quizfront has a wheelchair accessible long wheelbase van that's readily stationed in Graz, Austria. And so do we have an entire full band set up of a backline and also instruments and like amplifiers, anything and everything you might need for a tour. So say you're an overseas band, want to tour Europe, just hit us up, tours@quizfrontbooking.com, and we'll literally pick you up at the airport, book your tour, get you in the van, bring the equipment, and you're set. So yeah, I guess that's a wrap for today's pilot episode. Big moment. I'm quite interested to see whether people will actually listen. If you're listening to this and you've made it to the end, thanks so much. And I would very much appreciate your feedback. Let us know what you thought of this episode. Let us know which kind of where you would like us to go further podcasts. Let us know whether there's any artists, any crew members, any tour managers, anybody you would like to see or hear, I guess, on this podcast. Either way, thanks so much for listening and hope to see you all soon. This is it from us for today. Have a good night.